Welcome back to Skin the Surface. Happy 2024, podcasters. My name is Dr. Rena, board-certified dermatologist, and I am so excited to start another season of this podcast. I love doing this podcast, and I love your feedback, so thank you for messaging me all, and we have some fun, exciting episodes coming up this year in 2024 with amazing guests, so definitely stay tuned. On this week's episode, I'm going to be talking about something that comes up quite a bit in my clinic, and that's medications. So a lot of patients will ask me, why is this medication named this way? And why are there so many names for one medication? Well, I'm going to be helping you understand what is in the name of pharmaceutical drugs. So let's break it down. So pharmaceutical drugs typically have three names, a chemical name, a brand name, and a generic name. So the chemical name really describes the molecular structure of the drug. And to be honest with you, it can also be too cumbersome just for us to kind of use it in our clinics and then also for patients and pharmacists to talk about. So when a medication is approved by a responsible United States government agency, the Food and Drug Administration, the drug is then given a generic name and then what we call a brand or trade name. So classically, the generic name and the brand name are developed and assigned by, believe it or not, two different governing bodies. So the generic name is actually provided by the United States Adopted National Council. And so the brand name is created and assigned by and patented by the company developing the drug, okay? So what goes into naming a medication? So the process of naming a drug actually can start years way before the approval of that medication to be out for sale. So outside agencies are used during early drug development to help in the naming process, as it is really important in pharmaceutical marketing and consumer appeal. So you want the medication to have a certain name that will be appealing to the consumer and also not very difficult or cumbersome to even say when you go to the pharmacy. So early on in the process, the chemical name or a shortened version of that chemical name, which kind of describes, again, the chemical or organic structure of the drug, is used as almost like a reference for these drug researchers and chemists when they're starting to name the medication. So they can sometimes use part of the chemical structure in the brand name and generic name. Sometimes it may not necessarily be directly related. So generic names are usually more frequently used by doctors and other providers, as they are, you know, reflect again the chemical structure or the mechanism of the drug, so how the medication works. So it's a little bit easier for us to kind of prescribe something in its generic form. As a dermatologist, it's really important to understand how each medication works. And so, for example, let's use psoriasis. So when I'm prescribing a medication for psoriasis, the generic name helps provide insight into how the medication works. For example, let's use the generic name for Humira. So Humira is a brand name, and the generic name is adalimumab. So the chemical name is human monoclonal D2E7 heavy chain anti-human tumor necrosis factor. Whew, say that a few times. So the AB and the end of the word adalimumab, so AB ending, represents the fully human monoclonal antibody that binds to and blocks a major player in the game of psoriasis, the psoriasis pathway. So the generic name AB gives us providers a hint, okay, this is how this medication works. Now let's talk about the development of a brand name. So development of a brand name can be really a challenging task because you want it to be distinct, memorable, think about a sexy name. So drug names are often considered maybe odd or unique in order to really stand out among the thousands of other drugs within its class. So the drug name should also be unique to prevent one medication mistakenly prescribed to as a different medication. And this is really important when it comes to safety. So you don't want two medications to sound almost exactly the same, because then the prescriber might be confused or the patient might be confused. So you might be going to the pharmacy and saying, oh, I thought I was supposed to get X and you're actually supposed to get Y, but they sound similar. So pharmaceutical agencies are really, you know, cautioned to avoid brand names that are overly promotional, advocating and advertising superiority of the drug among others in its class. So you don't want any bias in the name, like best drug ever as a name, because that will definitely, you know, sway consumers to buy or to look into their drug. You know, this is actually all also closely examined by the FDA in order to comply with our current government agency standards for drug development. So there are definitely a lot of safety measures in place set by the FDA. Now, a common question patients have asked me, and I've always wondered this myself, is why are the letters X, Y, and Z commonly used in brand names? So if you think about it, they are unique letters, despite being considered sometimes a pronunciation nightmare for both patients, consumers, and providers. But interestingly, a number of drugs prescribed, I was looking at this and doing some research on my own about this. And I was reading that numerous drugs prescribed to females primarily frequently have the letters A, M, like Mary, L, like Larry, S, like Sam. And those are considered more elegant, soft, feminine. So you might see a lot of birth controls like Yasmin, Seasonelle, Elise, Aranelle. So those might have those letters in them, which I thought was interesting. Oftentimes, the brand name is really developed to help the consumer understand the purpose and the use of the drug, right? So the generic Metaxalone, the brand name is called Scalaxin. So it is a muscle or skeletal relaxer, Scalaxin. Isotretinoin, the brand names are Absorica or Accutane, and that is an oral vitamin A. So the A in the name can sometimes help consumers understand it. Brand names also may also help reflect a hyphenated version of the generic name. So for example, the generic minocycline, the brand is Minocin. So that can be very helpful to understand. The brand and generic names also can help the consumer or the patient or you guys in understanding the type of disease or the infection targeted by the drug. For example, the generic name is terbinafine. The brand name for this oral antifungal drug is Lamisil. And we use Lamisil in dermatology for fungal infections, specifically tinea infections caused by a fungus called Trichophyton tonsurans. So the T in terbinafine can be a friendly reminder for both the physician and the patient that this antifungal medication targets the Trichophyton species and is used to treat tinea infections, hence the T. Well, that's all we have, podcasters, for this week's episode. I hope you guys all learned a lot. I'm so excited for this new season of Skin the Surface. We are going to be having amazing guests. Just some sneak peeks. If you follow us on Skin the Surface podcast Instagram, you might have seen some special guest photos, but we'll definitely be diving more into acne and then also taking a different approach, a more holistic approach when it comes to acne. So I'm excited to have a very special guest talk about diet and acne. And then we'll be diving into the science behind one of the most commonly recommended skincare products by dermatologists, and that is a company called La Roche-Posay. And we'll have a special guest from the La Roche-Posay crew talking about what goes into the products that you see at your grocery store, the science behind La Roche-Posay. I'll also be having some episodes on pediatric rashes. So if you have a little one at home or you have a family member who has little ones and you just notice that they are having molluscum or warts or pediatric eczema, we'll be discussing treatments for those, some of the topicals, injectables that came out for pediatric rashes, and what goes into those medications. And then, of course, we'll be having a lot more episodes on psoriasis, hidradenitis, and some interesting skin infections. So definitely stay tuned for a wonderful Skin to Surface 2024 season. As always, follow us on Skin to Surface Podcast on our website, Instagram, Twitter, and send me messages. I love to hear from our subscribers. As always, stay safe and healthy, podcasters.